Buzz.com.
This is the morning brief from the Economic Times, produced in collaboration with Awaaz.com.
The pandemic has stretched your finances to the limit. You urgently need some cash and don't know what to do when suddenly, scrolling through your phone, you see ads offering a loan instantly, without any cumbersome paperwork. You click on the ad and download the app. But if you agree to give it access to your contacts and gallery, it's likely that you've fallen victim to an unscrupulous digital lender. Soon, you'll find that your loan is ballooning rapidly, and if you miss even a single repayment installment, a nightmare of online shaming and harassment by recovery agents will begin. At times, even driving the borrower to suicide. Of late, there's been a spate of reports about these unsavory digital loan apps, sometimes referred to as Chinese loan apps, and their many victims in India. In response, the Reserve Bank has recently set up a committee to look at these dubious online lenders, and platforms like Google, as well as law enforcement, have swung into action. But many questions still remain. In today's episode, we'll be looking at why these apps suddenly begin flourishing, how they were able to bypass regulations so easily, and what needs to be done to stop what's clearly an illegal business. From the Economic Times, I'm Indulekha Arvind, and you're listening to The Morning Brief. To take us through this very disturbing issue, I've invited Srikant L. of the digital payments advocacy group Cashless Consumer, who's been analyzing how these apps operate for months. Good morning, Srikant.
Hi, Indulekha.
I also have my colleagues Venkat Anand and Shailesh Menon, who recently published a cover story in ET magazine about the digital loan app trap, joining us. Welcome to The Morning Brief, Venkat, Shailesh.
Hey, thanks for having us, Indu.
Thank you, Indu. Good morning.
You know, one of the things that strikes me is considering how tightly regulated lending is. How do these apps manage to proliferate and operate so easily? Venkat, can you shed some light on that?
It's around 2016-17 that these apps sort of start mushrooming in India. Initially, it was called payday loans or salary day loans, you know, which would be small ticket loans that these lenders would give, particularly to young working professionals who might need that capital. But I think over the last 18 months or so, according to people we spoke to, this has seen a substantial increase.
Okay.
Also, particularly with the Chinese interest in the space, it's coming more to light in the last 1 month because of the suicides.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the entire timeline as to how this sort of scales up, this picks up during the pandemic. I mean, that is something that I heard from multiple people, that the boom in business was largely driven by, you know, by the fear of their inability to recover the money that they have already lent. So that's where it comes from. And obviously, the pandemic, or rather the national lockdown,
mm-hmm.
is also a period of extremely heavy stress, especially on the financial front for a lot of people, for a lot of gig economy workers who seem to be a good chunk of their target audience. And, you know, that's where they see a business opportunity.
Shailesh, how do they manage to, you know, flout regulations and operate with such apparent ease?
So, before we talk about lending apps, you know, we need to understand, you know, the lending laws in our country. And, you know, these are pretty simple and straight to understand. So there's no law that prevents people from loaning money to one another, basically. If two friends, A and B, if A is lending money to B, it's a perfectly legal transaction. But if A is accepting an interest from B for his loan, then he will have to show it as an income in his return filing. If one has to do commercial lending, you know, he has to either get himself registered as an NBFC or maybe get a bank license, you know. If he doesn't want to do either of the two, then he can kind of, you know, register himself as a money lender under the Money Lenders Act, you know, which is there in several states, basically, the state law. When you come to this, when you talk about these digital lenders and their illegitimate business or the illegitimate digital lenders, these guys go completely off radar. You know, they don't stick to any of these three modes. They may not have an NBFC. They are definitely not a bank, and they rarely kind of sign up with sign up as a money lender. What they do is they simply register a new company under the Companies Act. they develop an app and just start commercial lending. So there's nothing that links them to the RBI or to the monetary authority, basically. Now, this mode is completely illegal. So there are a few smarter guys, still the illegitimate ones. What they do is, on the right side of the law, they'll just try to tie up or, you know, or partner with an inactive NBFC. Now the curse of Indian banking is that there are 9,000 NBFCs, you know, over 9,000 registered NBFCs in the country. And out of the, you know, only the good guess is that, you know, over 8,500 or 8,500, they are not doing any meaningful business. They're just shell NBFCs. They just don't have any business, you know, to speak about. So what they do is these illegitimate lenders, they just partner with these NBFCs, you know, use them as the front, and then they start giving out loans. You know, in such arrangements, the NBFC, it doesn't have any, it doesn't take any loans on its book, but it gets a commission, it gets a 1-3% commission for all the loans disbursed without really having to take the risk of, you know, booking the loans on its book. And, you know, the lender, the legitimate lender or the app, you know, it lends from his own pocket or on behalf of people who have kind of, you know, bankrolled his business.
Okay, got it. But Srikanth, could you explain the Chinese connection that exists for a lot of these apps, as you've pointed out in your research and analysis?
Yeah, so fundamentally, there are like two types of connections. So one is, say, whether the Chinese investors own NBFCs directly through ownership structures, or say indirectly starting these illegitimate fintech companies that Shailesh just mentioned about. And then the other connection is on the technology front. So the first connection was on the financial front and ownership structures of these companies. The other connection is the technology. So what most of these apps do is use a white label software backend. By that, what I mean is it's like using an off-the-shelf software and customizing it to bring out an app. To give an example, starting a loan app is as easy as starting a blog, just like how people say, download WordPress and deploy their own blog on their own site. Starting a loan app is as easy as that. And most of these white label softwares that have analyzed have predominantly developed by Chinese entities. And these entities, in fact, even operate kind of globally in the sense they market their white label softwares to entities that operate in multiple countries. And this is like one set of industries that is catering to the loan apps. And then we actually have a broader ecosystem of data brokers, wherein like all these instant loan apps also do one other promise, right? Which is like instant provisioning of loan with very minimal documentation or even credit bureau check. I mean, the whole premises that these entities service a population which, say, do not have a formal financial history or credit score and so on. So what they do is they also do an alternate data-based risk modeling. And for these alternate data sources, most of these loan backends actually sync up with data brokers who might have sourced data either from your OEM devices or, you know, the fancy apps. So now here is where it is important to link up the, say, the app ban, which the government announced a few months back, citing that the apps kind of intrude and take away not much of data.
Got it. But Venkat, could you take us through how these apps typically operate, you know, starting from reeling in the customers and how that some kind of seems to increase very rapidly?
In terms of the modus operandi, I think it's pretty simple. I mean, having spoken to multiple victims, at least two victims told me that they got sucked in by entire promise of an instant loan, the sort of the need not to go through the, you know, the rigors and the rigmarole of the official, you know, lenders in India. So the objective is obviously it's out there. People need money. So they sort of flood in these social networks with very easy ads that can be manipulated. But once you get sucked into it, it's a very straightforward process. This is a completely opaque process, which just relies on a few steps. And then you get sucked into the whole process in the sense that you seek a loan of let's say 10,000 rupees. And then, you know, that product is for a 7 to 15 day period.
Okay.
Even though on Google Play Store, let's say it's advertised for a 60 to 90 day period, that is because of the policy of the Play Store itself. you know, the moment you start paying the loan, I mean, you get completely sort of, you know, caught in this vortex of sorts. It's a trap laid for you, because the moment you pay that loan, it's usually out of your savings account. And, you know, these companies know that you need more money. So immediately they will offer you a loan of let's say I take a loan of say 10,000 rupees. They'll say, okay, you know what? Okay, you've repaid the loan now. Okay, how about you take 20,000 rupees. And obviously these come at a heavy interest rate, which sometimes can be annualized into hundreds or thousands of percents. And then come the recovery agents. That itself is an industry, as was told to me by a couple of people who are following this space very closely. For example, let's say the company will be in one state and the recovery side of the business will be in some other state. So databases are handed over en masse to these recovery agents, which in due course sounds like a data breach, because obviously this is confidential data. It involves Aadhaar, it involves PAN card, and so on. And then they start using unscrupulous methods to social shame.
Got it.
Just to add to Venkat,
sure.
So the recovery agents also act as a selling agents. So what they do initially is they don't actually instantly start go to the social shaming levels. So they, for a person who's done his first default, they would probably actually ask them to take another loan app, get another loan, and then repay the first. And this kind of gives them a time. But then this kind of goes into a loop, which basically makes people roll up loans. And this is what we've seen in some victims having as much as 20 apps on their phone. All these lending apps which kind of roll up loans.
Yes.
And a small note on social shaming and digital shaming, in the sense that while social shaming is not new, typically all lenders from time immemorial have, say, indulged in that, there's a distinct aspect when it comes to digital, especially say when they use a medium like WhatsApp and create a group of all your contacts. I think the kind of level of social shaming kind of exponentially increases, because now literally every person on your phone is aware of your shaming, as against say a physical lender coming in front of your house and shaming, which only restricts to say your neighborhood.
Of course. So in a tragic way, digital means that they've also been able to scale up this shaming to unprecedented levels, right?
Right.
You know, why did it take so long for the regulator to wake up? Shailesh, can you tell us what they've done so far?
Well, let's start with Google, you know, because Google is actually the platform that parades these apps before the public. Google has deplatformed, several lending apps, you know, that offer extreme short-term loan. As Venkat said, you know, these guys, these apps, these illegitimate apps, mm-hmm. They get on the Play Store by qualifying themselves as 60 to 90-day lenders. And once they are on the platform, they start, peddling 7 to 30 days loans, basically. Now, Google only approves 60-plus days loan products on its, or rather under its lending app category. So Google has been proactive so far, in throwing out a lot of these apps that offer or that peddle these short-term loans, extreme short-term loans. So the regulator, which in this case is the Reserve Bank of India, they have appointed a working committee, to look into this entire digital lending apps, segment basically. And, this committee, may come out with some laws or guidelines over the next few months. So that's one thing that we are expecting from the Reserve Bank.
Yeah, just to add to Shailesh on the regulation, I think the Kerala government has announced in its budget that they will be amending their Money Lenders Act to include provisions related to these digital lenders. And this is important because Shailesh initially mentioned that you have to follow in one of the three categories, two of them being regulated by the RBI, which is the banks and NBFCs, and the money lenders being regulated by the Money Lenders Act through various state laws. And in that sense, I think the Kerala government's move should kind of be replicated across.
Got it. Shrikant, I finally wanted to come to you to tell us, what can someone do if they've been a victim of these apps? And also, what are the red flags that people should watch out for?
Okay, so one obviously is they can contact the police if there's harassment on repayment. But reports have suggested that even though the apps have been like deplatformed from Google Play Store, the harassment continues, or so the recovery operations still continue. And one way, frankly, is to pay out and get out of the mess. Coming to the red flags, if there is no website address, that's obviously a first red flag. We've kind of analyzed over 1,000 apps and only like 300 of them had a legit website. And one other red flag is the physical address. So the app, Google Play Store, actually has a physical address mentioned for some of these apps. And here again, only hardly 10% of the apps actually had a physical address. And one could easily verify that address by, say, copying that address and putting in Google Maps and to see whether it actually exists in real world. This is like one easy, quick filter red flag that people can do. The other red flag, let's say you've had a loan app and see, if you've not got a copy of loan agreement, in a typical digital lender flow, there has to be an agreement between the lender and you, and you have to e-sign that agreement. And only then the lending agreement actually becomes a valid legal document. The other red flag, obviously, is like a non-responsive customer care and so on. So,
thanks for explaining that so lucidly. Thank you, Srikant, Venkat, Shailesh, for joining us today and at great length explaining what the issue is and what consumers could do.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, Indu.
The crisis of the pandemic was evidently an opportunity for a host of unscrupulous digital lenders, many with Chinese links, to prey on people who were in dire need of money. While law enforcement has been proactive, it's again regulation that needs to catch up so that such fly-by-night operators are not allowed to entrap more victims. In a situation where building a loan app is apparently as easy as starting a blog, perhaps as Srikant mentions, most states could take a cue from Kerala's plans to amend the rules around the Moneylenders Act to make it harder for these digital loan sharks to operate. You're listening to The Morning Brief from The Economic Times, and I'm Indulekha Arvind. Today's episode was edited by Devina Sengupta and Nehal Chaliawala and coordinated by Nehal. Do send us your feedback to themorningbrief@timesgroup.com and share the episode on social media if you enjoyed it. The Morning Brief airs every Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Avaaz.com